Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professional. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting a podcast series with Bruce Kelper, top international security authority and chief security advisor for Microsoft Canada. In today's podcast, we're going to get into Bruce's role as a chief security advisor and to some of the paths he's taken to get to his present position. We'll also talk about how he generated this passion or what was really sort of the catalyst to get him involved in security. And we'll get into some sort of drill down issues on the whole topic of security. So welcome, Bruce, and I really want to thank you for coming in today.
Oh, thanks very much for inviting me.
Bruce, as chief security advisor, what does your work entail? And for example, can you detail maybe some of the research areas, some of the challenges and problems you're having, or problems you're addressing, I should say, and maybe solutions and so forth?
Well, so my role is essentially as an advisor. Most of my time is spent working as the interface between the Canadian government and sort of larger enterprises and Microsoft from a security perspective. But I also cover a number of specific areas. For example, I'm the online safety spokesperson in Canada. And what that really means is helping, for example, parents and kids and sort of law enforcement and other groups really understand some of the challenges that they may be facing online and essentially what they can be doing to help keep themselves safer. A second big area of my focus is really working with industry associations and community groups to, again, not only help them understand from a broad perspective how to sort of deal with security issues as an advisor, but also I look at it very much as how can you help people do things like move along their careers? For Canada, one of the most important things I see is getting people into the security industry and the IT industry in general. And so how can you provide people a path to be able to do that? And so I see myself essentially from a community perspective as a conduit. Now, the last part is that I own the all-up security strategy in Canada for Microsoft. And so this includes things like our sort of PR, the events that we sponsor, the types of programs that we deliver, whether they be to the government or to the consumers or industry across Canada. And so that really means making sure that I not only keep connection and keep speaking to the customers to help them to understand what they need, but also making sure that I've got a finger on the pulse of security in Canada especially.
You know, on that online security area itself, are there any specific groups that you really feel enthusiastic about?
Well, I must admit, I've been privileged enough to work with a number of groups across Canada. For example, recently Calgary was voted online safety security or online safety city of the year. As being essentially one of the safest places to be in. And part of that is because the team there really came together. And the team consists of people like private sector, organizations like Microsoft and Bell and others. A lot of the charity organizations and those targeted at helping kids and parents, so the Kids Help Phone and others. And also law enforcement, the city of Calgary and others really came together as one team and said, okay, we need to help people understand the challenges and give them practical solutions from across the board. And so we spent a lot of time going into schools, going into community groups, and talking to large audiences about what they can do to help keep themselves safe online. A couple of other groups that I've worked with especially have been things like the Child Exploitation Center in Toronto, working with the group there. I don't know if you know Paul Gillespie at all.
Yes, he's a police officer, isn't he? Or a former police officer, something like that? Or maybe
yes.
I got it wrong.
Absolutely. So Paul Gillespie is a former police officer, and basically he was the person that emailed Bill Gates a number of years ago and said, there must be a better and easier way to be able to track things like sex offenders, so that we can help not only keep track of where they are, but understand things like profiles. What are people doing? How are people doing it from a sex offense angle? And so I've been working with organizations like KINSA, the Kids Internet Safety Alliance, that Paul heads up, and other organizations to help both deal with things like the direct challenges. So those may be officers needing training on, say, Microsoft technology from a forensics perspective. In other words, how do I analyze the Microsoft technology to help me in my day-to-day life with my cases? To also making sure that we're providing enough resources and support for organizations like KINSA to help them continue their good work.
Bruce, you know, you've got this sort of remarkable career, and I know that you've sat on boards and so on, and you've done quite a bit of international forensic work. Can you profile the paths that you've taken to get to your present position and the key career lessons that you have learned along the way?
So there were really a few big defining moments for me. So my background really started once I left university to doing things like hardware and sort of specialist hardware design, so looking at servers for specific uses. And one of the things that I found out was having the specialist knowledge not only helped the company, but really was helping others. So I used to get phone calls from law enforcement across the country saying, well, we know you're an expert in this particular field. We actually need somebody to help us understand forensics to do with things like RAID arrays or other technologies, which was pretty cutting edge at the time. And so what I was able to do was to take my skills and then sort of apply that to the needs that other organizations or other groups had. The second sort of big defining moment was really stepping away from the corporate environment and essentially running businesses myself to understand what it is at a far greater level that it takes to run sort of businesses within the IT industry. Because that really helped from three perspectives. One was to make sure that I understood not only the technical aspects, but also the business, the marketing, the accounting, the sales side of it, to understand how they all fitted together. And I found that especially important when moving through organizations like Microsoft, where it's not only a single focus that you need to take, you need to understand the bigger picture, and I think that's been the biggest asset that I've had. The other sort of defining factor in my career was a shift towards looking at companies like Microsoft and others to understand how I can help those organizations really make people's lives better. And part of the reason I say that is because I spent a lot of time in the community working with community groups around the world. And wherever I was, there was a very, very common set of threads. Really, people asking three questions. I have a problem that I need to deal with today. And where do I find the information, or who can I go to and speak to and find out the answers? The second one was, I'm thinking about going down this path, whether it's from a career perspective, a technology perspective, and I really need to understand what the options are and ask people, so what path did you take, and what was your experiences, the good, the bad, and the ugly? And that's really important for people to understand not only their options, but perhaps the impact of their decisions. And the third big area is nobody stays static in terms of careers. People always want to be able to improve themselves, whether that's just in terms of knowledge or whether that's literally sort of moving their career forward. And so from that perspective, I realized that I could come work with an organization like Microsoft that enabled me and provided me with resources to help people in those particular areas. And so I would say that the sort of one of the big defining moments was realizing you can actually, as an individual, change the world. That may not necessarily be on a global scale, but that may be the world of the people that are immediately around you. And I think that's the opportunity when people look at their careers is to really ask themselves, well, okay, where is it that I want to go? How is that going to impact and sort of help other people? And at the end of the day, how can I make the most of what I've got available, whether that's my time or my resources, or literally be able to make sure that I've got an opportunity to sort of further my career?
Every time I talk to you, you have this sort of amazing passion. In fact, it's quite infectious. Totally, you know, revolving around security in the community and so on. What were really those triggers that got you initially involved with security?
Well, I think that the first thing was when I started working with organizations from a hardware perspective, and I started to realize that there were a lot more in terms of considerations around, for example, the communications work that I was doing. So I was installing the hardware for things like VPNs and internet-based services, so routers and other equipment. And I started to get very interested at the time in how they dealt with things like security. So I started to ask a lot of questions to say, well, I'm deploying the hardware and I'm deploying it based on the specifications that I've been given. But I started to notice that a lot of organizations, security was essentially a bolt-on. And when I was designing systems with large corporations around the world, very often I would be having the conversation with the security teams once a lot of the planning had been done. So I started to try and bring in the security conversation earlier and earlier into the planning process so that I got an opportunity to not only understand the impact of what I was doing connected with things like security, but also making sure that we had everybody's perspective in the room. And it's been a really interesting shift that I've seen over the last sort of 10 years or so especially, that security almost is coming out of the closet. People have sort of deemed security as being this big black box that I don't have anything to do with, to now starting to become a lot more integrated into what we need, what we're doing on an everyday basis and what we need to do within our organization. And I think that's the big shift that I always hoped that would happen. And probably the biggest reason I got into the security world is just because I knew I could see the bigger picture and essentially combine security into what I was doing.
And I know that you're really involved in terms of key initiatives out in the marketplace, for example, Task and Sector. Can you tell us more about these two things?
Well, the interesting thing about the Task, or the Toronto Area Security Clutch, was that when I started talking to a lot of people in the security community, there is an awful lot of interest in having a forum, having a place that they could go and ask those questions. They could get their sort of training and education that they could help further their own careers. And I stopped and said to a number of people, but haven't we got those types of organizations already here? For example, groups like ISSA or ISC Squared or even the KIPS groups and lots of others who have security as part of what they do. And the feedback I got from a lot of people was, yes, but we really want something that essentially meets the needs of the everyday security professional. We do want to learn and we want to get as much sort of technical information or as much sort of specific information for what I'm doing as possible. I want a forum to be able to ask those questions. And so we formed the user group, so somewhat over 3 years ago, and have now grown to one of the largest independent security groups in North America with over 1,000 members. And as I mentioned earlier, the focus was giving people a forum that they can ask the questions when they've got a problem today, that they can ask the get to know people, their peers within the community, to be able to sort of ask, what are you doing and how are you doing it? And especially that connecting both the existing security professionals with the security companies that are out there from a career perspective. But also I wanted to take a slightly different focus. I realized that in order to deal with a lot of the security challenges in Canada, we need to embrace new communities as well. So, for example, people that are not in the security world right now, so whether that's women in IT, whether that's new Canadians, people coming into the country with qualifications, with a huge amount of experience, but really needing to make those contacts to help them get into the security world, or at least into the IT world within Canada. And I also wanted to almost make security a part of everything that people sort of do within Canada, within the IT world. And so we've spent a lot of time making sure that Task is accessible to not just the hardcore security professionals, but that also people who are thinking about moving into the security world and making it a safe place for them to come along and say, you know what, I am a newbie, or this is a new area for me and I'm trying to extend my skill set. What are the paths that are available to me? And so we wanted to make sure that it was something for everyone in the security world. And the interesting sort of way that that progressed is one of the most popular sessions and events that we did every year was a roundup of things like Black Hat and DEF CON and the other security conferences. So in Canada, we've certainly got conferences like CANSEC West and West Coast Security Forum and InfoSec and others. But we found that what people were asking for was to understand what is actually happening in the rest of the world as well, wanting to see and get access to the cutting edge of security. And so we eventually, as part of the advisory group within Sector, within Task, sat down and said, what we really would like to do is bring the best and brightest and also partner with the other conferences that are happening across the country to give people access to the information, the people, the technology that is cutting edge within the security world, and not just from an attack perspective, but what it really means to them and how can they think about leveraging whether it's that information or that technology within their working lives. And so we really came up with the concept of the Security Education Conference Toronto as being the sort of focal point of what we're doing essentially within Eastern Canada because of the other security conferences out west, and making sure that we gave a great opportunity for people to come and learn about the latest and the greatest from a security perspective.
You know, that provides a great vehicle for basically anybody who's, whether they're in IT or not, to really get involved in the security aspect, which is essential for today's infrastructure and more, right?
Well, actually, last year at Sector, we did a survey ahead of time with CATA, and the interesting results of that survey came back and said the vast majority of people were interested in expanding their skill sets, and so to your point, making sure that people had the opportunity to, who are not connected with the security world right now, is sort of add to their skills. And what we found was that an awful lot of people in IT were interested in perhaps having a broader skill set, like adding security as part of that, not only to help their own careers, but realizing that it also helps the businesses that they're working with and for. So from that perspective, being able to understand security implementations as an architect or as the person on the help desk or as the person who is up there as an IT manager making the decisions about direction. And so we found a lot of people coming in and joining in the security conversation purely and simply because it makes sense for them to add that as another string to their bow.
You know, you mentioned CADA, and I guess that's the Canadian Advanced Technology Alliance. Is that report still available?
Yes, the report is still available. I'll send you a copy of it. But essentially, the findings were very interesting from the point of view of how people are perceiving security. So I'll certainly send you a copy.
You know, Bruce, because of your great background, and it's so extensive, and really you're an acknowledged international leader in this area, can you share some of your security tips from your work?
Well, it's interesting that, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of people perceive security as being a bolt-on, as being something that you think about almost after the fact. Now, that is certainly changing in terms of how people are approaching it. But certainly the biggest tips when I think about security are really about that sort of thinking about security in everything that you're doing. And that doesn't have to be IT security. It could be physical security. It could be other aspects. So, for example, we see a large convergence of security and privacy right now. A great example of that is, as a consumer, if I'm doing a business with a company that has maybe an online presence, if my credit card details or my personal private information is compromised, is that a security or a privacy issue? In real terms, it's actually both. And so one of the big things that I'm seeing is a lot of the convergence of companies understanding that security and privacy is one in the same thing. So when I often think about sort of security tips for people, I often try and ask them to keep a broader perspective and not necessarily just concentrate on what are the traditional views of security. Some great examples of that. Actually, I'll give you some stats that I think are quite interesting. Now, security breach notifications. Generally, when people think about security, they think about sort of malware, viruses, etc., or they may think about hackers, so somebody deliberately trying to access information resources within an organization unauthorized. Or they may think about the exploits that enable them to do that. But in reality, that's a very, very small part of the overall security challenges. So, for example, in the second half of 2007, only 13% of the security breach notifications here in Canada were anything to do with exploits or malware or hacking. By contrast, 57% of those same security breach notifications that were publicly disclosed involved lost or stolen equipment. And so where we see a lot of the convergences around security and privacy and also the convergence around the types of and usage of devices from the consumer space into the enterprise, what we see in many cases is people almost having to broaden their perspective around security. And so I suppose my big tip there is to keep a very open mind about what is security and how it sort of impacts organizations or your organization and your daily life. I would say that the next big tip from my perspective is when I start to think about what I'm doing, especially in the online world, I get a lot of people, especially parents and kids and what have you, that think about security from the perspective of things like online safety or that will sort of affect them perhaps on a more day-to-day basis. And a lot of organizations or a lot of individuals as well think about security from a point-in-time perspective. For example, they'll think about it as being antivirus software. They'll think about it as being technology. And security goes way beyond technology. I mean, technology is not a silver bullet when security is concerned. It's part of the puzzle. It's the people, it's the processes, and the technology that are required when I'm thinking about security. Also, the other big thing is around how people approach things like their online world. So one of the sort of big misnomers is that, for example, what I say and do online is private. And it's always interesting that I ask people about essentially the use of social networking sites and others, and I get the responses really along the lines of, I use all of the privacy settings, I understand what the challenges are. But I find there's a big differentiation between what people perceive and the reality. I always try and instill to people that things like online, there is no such thing as privacy, partly because the whole idea about the internet is being able to get out there and communicate, getting out there and sort of sharing information, sharing ideas. And the moment you start sharing is the moment that, in many cases, security and privacy go out of the window. Some great example there are things like, if I forward an email, well, once I've sent the email, I have no control. Once I post something, I have no control. And so one of the sort of big tips there is to always think about what you're doing and you're saying online, or that the areas, or understand that there really is no sort of fundamental privacy right now on the online world. And I would say that the other sort of big area that I always try and communicate to people is the area of communication. I find that most security challenges come across or come into being because of a lack of communication. So it was interesting. I was talking to a professor from one of the universities in the Toronto area who was discussing their approach towards teaching kids about safety and about security. And one of the areas that I noticed that they didn't have within their curriculum, essentially, was basic communication skills. Now, the interesting part of that is I always found that most of the security problems that we had or that I was involved with, whether it was from a case perspective or an auditing perspective or an implementation perspective, was due to a lack of communication and a lack of understanding around how to communicate effectively. A great example, I think, that you mentioned earlier is, for example, the going out and as a salesperson, being able to communicate to the customer effectively the options that they have, whilst understanding both their requirements, but also understanding the sort of the limitations that they may have. And so communication becomes absolutely fundamentally key to successful sort of deployment, successful sales, successful keeping yourself safe online. And so certainly communication is absolutely key to it. And I would say that the last big thing is almost sort of dare to dream from a security perspective, in that it has an ever-moving set of goalposts, and so it's very easy to almost break away and say, you know what, I think that this is a better approach, and essentially really trying things like new mechanisms or new methods, doing the research on whether that be online or sort of through your peers to understand what are the latest and greatest. Because at the end of the day, nothing ever stays static, and that's a huge opportunity for people to get out there and show their talent.
Bruce, you know, you see all of this sort of news, you know, this year and the previous year, and it's going to happen in the future, too. There's a sort of world economic crisis, and you see companies failing, and really it could affect the way we live. And I see this sort of sort of this contrast between security and transparency and SOCs. What are your views on all of that?
Well, I think one of the big things that's really starting to happen with the sort of the compliancy and the standards angles is that there is a lot of, essentially a lot of convergence that's happening in that field. So when we start to look at balancing, for example, the needs of the many in terms of helping keep people, whether it's sort of safe online or sort of businesses, and balancing the needs of, say, the government in terms of things like national security, we see certainly different countries go down different paths. We've seen the U.S. very much take a focus around national security as being an enormous priority. And we've seen the enactment of the Patriot Act and all sorts of other laws within the U.S. Then we look at Europe, and Europe has taken a slightly different stance in terms of, in many cases, focusing on the privacy of the individuals, so that we see companies being taken to task about the information that they gather, what they're doing with that information, the types of, essentially, ways they're communicating with, say, law enforcement departments, etc. We heard sort of Google announce recently reducing the time they keep personal private information or identifiable information down to 6 months. And we've seen a lot of other organizations follow suit or sort of make those same changes at similar times. So we see still that there's sort of the balance between the national security perspective and also the needs of the individual. However, I think there's a couple of interesting things that are happening. We're getting a lot of consumers, sort of citizens online, saying, we want to do business with, say, governments on an online forum. We found that to be very useful within, say, banking environments and others. And so it's suddenly almost forcing organizations and governments to really stop and take a long, hard look at some of the protection that they put in place for things like consumer information. I mean, we've seen a lot of security breaches in the past couple of years, especially with things like DVDs or CDs going missing, hard drives going missing, laptops being lost or stolen, USB keys containing information. And so what we're starting to see is consumers demanding more protection from the organizations that they're dealing with and voting with their feet when those organizations don't meet that level or that sort of those expectations. And that's almost had to caused organizations and governments to stop and think about how they interact with people and their customers, especially in the online world. And so that's a very positive thing when it sort of talks about driving the needs of the consumer, driving the business as and security essentially becoming an enabler. And in fact, organizations now sort of talking about their commitment to security as being part of their approach towards their customers. Now, the reason I sort of say that's really important is because when we start to look at where businesses have traditionally invested money, it hasn't been in terms of things like security. And in fact, security is often one of the first things that gets dropped off the list when organizations are looking at cost cutting. But with security now taking a much higher profile, as it were, within services that are supplied to the customers, businesses can no longer afford to essentially dismiss security as a cost-saving opportunity. What they're doing and what we're sort of really talking to a lot of businesses about is turning it around and making sure that security is sort of built into everything they do from the ground up, so it's fully integrated, so that it's a lot easier and more cost-effective to include it as part of their operating rather than sort of bolting on. A phenomenal example we're really starting to see around that is in the world of virtualization. So we see a lot of businesses who are looking at virtualization as a way to save money moving forward. However, we see security and management as being the one of the biggest challenges that organizations are going to have within a virtualized world. In other words, there are nuances that may not be addressed by their current security approach and infrastructure. And so what we're starting to see organizations doing is to say, well, we can realize cost savings in terms of things like energy costs, in terms of floor space, in terms of ease of deployment, and all sorts of other benefits that they can get from the virtualization space, and almost turning back and putting some of those savings back into dealing with things like security and management. And that's a very positive thing from an industry perspective, in that security is a much more fundamental part of and much more integrated part of the business investment rather than being the sort of bolt-on. So yes, I think we're going to see a decline in terms of as businesses really feel the pinch from the sort of global economic challenges. But what we are seeing is that it's not the first thing that's necessarily being dropped off the list as being a cost saving. What we're seeing is a lot of companies really committing to their customers that they are still going to commit to security and privacy within their organizations. And I think that's an important trend that has happened a lot more recently than certainly we've seen in the past.
Well, that ends the first podcast in our series with Bruce Cowper, who's an International Security Authority and the Chief Security Advisor for Microsoft Canada. So, Bruce, I'm really looking forward to the next part or the next podcast where we continue on in this journey of discussion about security.
Oh, thanks, Stephen, for inviting me along, and I certainly look forward to it as well.